does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go? Gone too soon, my friend. And where go the echoes of our laughter ring?
Food fight, everyone. Let's all.
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Oh, we've got so much happening here. In fact, the show just can't stop itself from happening. And that's I'm just so excited today. We have, as usual, very important news and views about Dearborn and the surrounding area. But we have two special guests, one of them live in the studio with us right now. In terms of hosts for the show, my name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM. And our WHFR news director, Dennis Reimars, is in the studio here. Dennis, mic check time. Say hello.
Hello. Hello, hello.
Okay.
Check.
Well, we can hear you. That's good.
Thank you.
And our very special guest from Henry Ford Community College itself, the home of WHFR-FM, and the license holder, by the way, is the president of Henry Ford Community College, Dr. Gail Mee. So welcome, Dr. Mee, to the journal. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Jay. I'm delighted to be here.
We usually see you about this time once a year. We'd like to get the word from the president's office about how things are going, and every new academic year is a real exciting time for us because so many things, so many new initiatives happening, and we're busting at the seams with students here, aren't we, again this fall?
We're happy to say we absolutely are. We have close to, once again, 18,000 credit students enrolled at the college. Many community colleges these days are actually seeing something of a decline in enrollment, but we've remained steady. And we're delighted to see so many students taking advantage of higher education here at Henry Ford.
Well, of course, there's many reasons for that, but, you know, we not necessarily on the show here today to blow our own horn, but because of all of our many special programs, not just college transfer programs, but certificate programs, some of which can be transferred, too, in more than 110 degree and certificate areas, we can offer the tremendous chance to get employment maybe a little bit quicker. Maybe people, I always recommend people should have four-year degrees, in spite of the fact that Governor Snyder last week just had a quote, well, you don't really need a four-year degree. And it's true. You get, there's many jobs out there, but most people wouldn't want them, and they may not last very long, and they don't have many benefits, and there's not much of a future in them. But, you know, I think everybody should be encouraged always to explore every bit of higher education they can. And I think life is, well, until it ends, is a growth experience, and therefore you've got to keep growing with your education and your skills and see what your potential is and make use of them for not only your own good but other people too. So we just have a great situation here with a quality institution. I can say this without you're needing to be humble, Dr. Mee. And of course, our tuition is less expensive than most of the other institutions in the area. Maybe we are the lowest, I don't know, but 18,000 students, busting at the seams, but now we have a pretty full campus. We have new parking lots from a couple years ago, beautiful landscaping, too, that came along with that, a high duck population, or is it a goose?
Geese. I believe they're geese.
Geese, okay. And, yes. And well, yeah, we do have to, well, we have to be careful where we step as we're walking
true.
Around the campus here, but they're very friendly, and they're always begging for food, but we, you know, don't feed the geese, please. Don't encourage that. But that just shows what a vibrant, ecologically sound environment we have here. And of course, the new buildings. The Science Center has been in use since early spring, but we're going to have apparently a sort of ribbon cutting ceremony this fall. It's been in pretty much full occupancy. Very exciting building. I was here the day that they were planting the roof.
That's such a weird thing to say, isn't it? We were planting the roof.
But it's a fabulous roof garden if you haven't been up there.
Isn't it awesome?
Oh, it's a wonderful, wonderful.
It's almost like a lab, too, isn't it?
It's an outdoor laboratory. Sure. We have a rain garden on the ground level, of course, and then the roof is just that, a roof garden. And they make for wonderful outdoor laboratories for our environmental science classes.
Can you actually go up there and take tours?
Yes, you can take tours, and it's a lovely place to go up and have a cup of tea or whatever.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we will have some seating up there.
Natural insulation as well.
It's lovely. Yeah. It's really
well,
very
several
very
buildings
nice.
In Dearborn. Even for a while, I thought the old City Hall was considering a living roof. I know my daughter at our public square middle school in Southfield, they were hoping to get a grant to do that. They do have an organic garden that she's in charge of, and all the kids, 7th, 8th graders, are learning how to grow things and keep the bugs away, and that's very exciting. So this is the way, you know, the sustainability future, and certainly that building has these extra facilities for that. What's the large pond next to it? Is that going to be, and that's not filled with water yet, but looks like that's going to be very environmentally interesting too.
That's the rain garden. And that will too serve as an outdoor laboratory, absolutely. We'll be teaching environmental sciences in the new wing of the Science Center.
Right.
So it only makes sense that those laboratories would be adjacent.
Of course, of course. And of course, the last year we knew, and that was early last spring, thanks to, because the whole building has really been sort of renovated and upgraded, as well as the new wing being added. And the new Hammond Planetarium is thanks to a grant from the Hammond family.
Guy Hammond.
Is really making that a great resource, and it's continuing with its free sky awareness and sky shows in there on a regular basis now. So that's very exciting. But just 2 days, it was announced last Sunday in the Press and Guide paper, HFC just received a grant of $15 million. So exciting. The largest grant the college has ever received in its history first of all, where did it come from? But secondly, could you explain for us what it's going to be doing?
I'd love to, because we're really so terribly excited about it. It has been a long time in the making. We had Undersecretary of Labor Jane Oates visit the campus maybe 3 years ago, announcing that the Department of Labor would be giving out these grants to community colleges. So we have been working toward this ever since. They're highly competitive grants. As I said, coming from the Department of Labor, it's a four-year program. Each year, the Department of Labor is giving monies out to community colleges. Specifically, they are designed to provide training and education for people who have been adversely affected by foreign trade. But the programs that we develop through this grant are certainly going to be available to all of our community. But specifically, the grant is designed for those who might be out of work or have their jobs threatened at this time.
Do we know what kind of instruction that's going to be? Is that only for high-tech workers or some of the low-tech workers who are out of work? Is that going to help them
We actually had a choice, but because we've been doing quite a bit of work in manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, we chose to focus on manufacturing. And so it will be preparing students not only for the automobile industry and suppliers, but also aerospace. In other words, these skills and education that they gain in this program can be used in a variety of manufacturing settings, processing, aerospace, auto, and even research.
So some of the higher tech jobs, they will actually be able to move on.
Yes. So,
somewhere else.
So, in fact, I was interested. Jay was talking about credentials that perhaps could then transfer on, or I'm calling them stackable credentials.
Yeah. Mm.
And so the truth is that there will be certificates built in, and a person can grow. Mm-hmm. And continue to stack those credentials.
Maybe while they're working,
degree.
Too.
While they're working.
Excellent.
Absolutely, while they're working. The idea is maybe you get a certificate, you're able to get a job, and then you can continue on and study further for additional certificates.
Wonderful.
That are all embedded ultimately in a degree program.
And the college comes up with so many unique programs like that. And obviously the people involved here are watching whatever trends. I know that's not the appropriate word, but whatever, things that are moving on professionally or in the business world. And the thing that comes to mind is not that long ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we had that wonderful program available for telecommunication.
That's right. That was a partnership with AT&T.
Wonderful program, and then it covered all three bases. If I'm not mistaken, it was infrastructure as well as actual repair or customer service and actually sales.
Uh-huh.
It was
That's
like a huge thing. So are programs like that, that seems like it would be very difficult to start up, and you need an AT&T too.
Well, yeah, and this program actually, this grant program, we're the lead. We wrote the grant, and we are the lead in the grant, but there are 13 community colleges around the country that are working with us on this that will be part of our consortium, and each one of us brought to the table an industry partner.
Okay.
So we have colleges from Texas, from Alabama, from Indiana, from 10 states, and we all came together and brought an industry partner with us. In our case, it's Ford, and we've worked very, very well. The people from Ford have been great collaborators with us. The important thing is, I think, that academics can sit around and talk about what we think our students need to know and be able to do, but it's so wonderful to have the employer right at the table telling us what that knowledge should be and what those skills need to be for that next generation of jobs. And so that's how it works. And that's how it worked with AT&T. And that's how it's working with Ford Motor Company and all of our other partners on this grant.
That's awesome. It relates to real life experience
it's
that way.
Very, very real. And we will prepare learning outcomes for, and then the employers will look at it and say, well, this is what they need to know. Or perhaps we want to tweak it in some other way. So dynamic program. I'm terribly excited about it.
I don't want to turn this into a political discussion one way or the other, but of course that money was incentive money, was valuable retraining money from the federal government,
That's
in effect.
Correct.
And this this kind of additional help to get people retrained and to work, it wouldn't have come about from Ford by itself. It just couldn't, right?
No, that's absolutely correct. This is federal Department of Labor grants. They allocate two grants per state only, one for a consortium, which is what we are, and one for an individual college. And Washtenaw got that one for $2.5 million. Because we have a consortium, we actually got the maximum allowed, which was $15 million.
Mm-hmm. But unlike, I mean, we have some people in the community that think there shouldn't be any government incentives or extra money going out. But unlike supporting, let's say, a new business, the Solyndra problem, that was going to be a solar manufacturing company in California, and it finally couldn't make do. And so the government sort of lost on that, although a lot of government initiatives do lose. But these kinds of grants to schools, I mean, there's all kinds of guidelines and administrative work and auditing, and they usually work out pretty good. First of all, because they're planned for so long.
That's right.
I mean, it's We've all upfront data.
This. You're absolutely right. Yeah. We've been planning this for 2.5-3 years. We've been planning on what we wanted to do and working with Ford and our other partners to be sure that this is something we want to do. You don't want to get a grant for something that may not be a priority for your college or for your community.
Sure.
But in this case, it truly is, I think, a priority for both.
We're talking today for at least the first half hour of the new WHFR Journal with Dr. Gail Mee, who is the current president of Henry Ford Community College. And just one other point about thing, I think I mentioned it earlier and maybe people heard about it on the show, but our Welcome Center. I might say, oh, they got a new desk or something. In fact, it's a whole building we opened last spring, and it houses several of our registrar, admissions, financial aid departments. Those are the three that are over there now?
All enrollment services.
Okay, all enrollment services.
So it's a one stop when a student decides that he or she wants to go to college. The Welcome Center is there, and you can begin by coming in and saying, I think I'd like to go to college. The concierge will direct you, and you can work your way right through all of the enrollment process, the placement testing, financial aid, admissions, registration, advising. All of that is in one place, very smooth. And it's also very technology-driven so that students actually are helped to do all of this on the computer. And the idea is that perhaps in the next semester they can do it from home. Mm-hmm. Where they learn to do it themselves. We don't do it for them.
Yeah, that's a great advance forward. Although we always had a lot of people, but there was always those lines, those long lines that we had to accommodate.
A lot of lines, that's
and,
right.
And since we've grown so much in enrollment in the last 3-4 years, we needed these additional facilities, which, and to your credit, you helped get that building bought. That was formerly owned by the Society of Manufacturing
that's
Engineers,
right.
And they still share a part of it, I guess, for some of their offices, but
yes.
They're not manufacturing as much as before, I guess, so they don't need as much space. But nonetheless, so that's our building, and I love the fact that there's a, I'd say, a fairly good-sized separate lot there, too, even though it is on the north side of our north parking lot. It's not too far to walk back to the main campus. I mean, the main campus is right there here on Evergreen Road, south of Ford Road. But parking should not be a problem at all in order to get to those services first and get the classes. And I think that's a great step forward for our students and the new students. In fact, as a faculty person, they don't really even want us there. They just send us an email, don't get in the way of the students. And I was thinking, well, I'm hurt. But
it's a well-oiled machine.
But yeah, I mean, we're here for the students.
Yes.
We got to get the students in here and give them the right help. Now, you mentioned, and it's true, academic advising is there. Is counseling still in the...
Yes, the space that was vacated by enrollment services, and when I say that, I mean admissions and registration and financial aid, were all in a building next to the library, in the center of campus. Mm-hmm. So when we moved enrollment services to their new home, that's not something that students have to do every day. So the fact that it's a little bit removed from the rest of campus is fine. The space that they vacated will become what we're currently calling our Student Success Center. And that means that it will house all of those services that can help students to be successful. So that means that we will have in there a comprehensive tutoring center. It means we will have counseling in there, job placement. The honors program will have a home in there. All of those services, those supports that make students, can help students to become successful. Because the truth is, while community colleges are all about providing access to higher education, we can't simply be, we're an open door, but we can't be a revolving door. Mm-hmm. And so while we want our students to come, we want our students to enroll, we also want them to be successful. And that means providing just that right mix of challenge and support so that they can be successful.
And in that building right here on campus, part of our sort of library facility too, they can, that's where the Counseling Center has been for years, mm-hmm. but they can be a quicker stop for students already on campus, already in classes.
Absolutely.
They can
right.
schedule
really
appointments and they can
the
quickly
campus.
Get there from their mm-hmm. classes and so on. And mm-hmm. and as you said, it's more for ongoing support.
Yes.
It's a great development.
I was just wondering, those rumors about the nightclub that will be downstairs in that former, no, not true? Okay.
Well, no, you know. Not true about a nightclub, but we were hoping perhaps for a small cyber cafe.
Because we did get that liquor license, you know, this last year.
I didn't want to go there.
Only
that's
for
what
the
Dennis is thinking about.
One restaurant.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Only there.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
And maybe for special events.
That's right. Yes.
All right. And now this is going to get a little complimentary here. Dr. Gail Mee, HFCC president, with us. Since she was here, she's won awards besides all these things that we've talked about being accomplished on the campus as part of, you know, years of planning, but pretty much planning when she was here for the last 6 years. You won a National Leadership Award back in April. It was announced the Italin Carré International Exemplary Leadership Award. And that's, again, that's. It seems like quite an honor. Their 21st annual international conference in Atlanta recognized you, and certainly we have benefited from your leadership and your initiatives for these last 6 years. Just so much, and I'm glad that you got this recognition along with many others. I mean, the Press and Guide. A story from a couple months ago did mention, oh my goodness, the 2012 Jean Brazel Community Role Model Award, the AAPAC Public Service Award. Who's the AAPAC?
The Arab American Political Action Committee. Nice.
There you go.
You really got a room on your shelves and walls.
Well, we're a very diverse campus, and we do something for everybody. And the 2008 YMCA Woman of Achievement in Business Leadership Award. And you've been part of many community boards, as many college presidents are. You sort
yes.
of spread the word of your existence as an institution around these other places. But Henry Ford Hospital, Engineering Society of Detroit, Detroit Chamber of Commerce, goes on and on. Dearborn Symphony, and just thank you very much. I don't know how that's even possible for one person to do all that, but you obviously have the ability and have done a great job in all of that. Which gets me to my last point, and kind of sad. The Board of Education here, our supervisors of Henry Ford Community College, our trustees, did offer you a contract for this next year, and you gracefully declined it. So you will not be returning later this year, maybe. In fact, you did promise, and thank you very much for the sake of some continuity, to stay until December of this year as our college president. And I have to ask this in all seriousness. This is a big question, so get ready for this. And I know you listen to the journal every Friday, every word of it, maybe on podcast, but
absolutely, wouldn't miss it.
Was it something I said?
Now that you mention it,
yeah.
Jay. Oh, I knew it.
I knew if you opened the door.
She heard the last show. That's what it was.
Yeah. No. The one she heard, yep.
We always thank the college, and you're the head of the college, for allowing us on the journal as part of our alternative mission. You know, we try to do what the commercial stations are not doing, but in as responsible a way as we can, to give alternative points of view, some not all that popular. We don't advocate, but we try to open people's minds to other choices and other possibilities and other perspectives on main issues. So we always announce that our opinions here on this show, and I'm just doing it for this hour, are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford Community College, except Dr. Mee when she speaks for herself, and that's her opinions. But we thank you for letting us do that, Henry Ford Community College, and I hope it doesn't change under new president. But they've always allowed WHFR to do a responsible job with our format, which tries to serve the needs of the local area, but also the larger community with ideas and information and music that the other stations are not providing. And, of course, we do it with almost no budget. We have a small stipend from the college equal to some other sponsored activities that's paid for out of student fees, not out of the general funds of the college. She's shaking her head. That's true. And and we raise the rest of the money from you, our loyal listeners, and that's about two-thirds of our budget. And most people, like Dennis, don't get paid. Nope. I get paid as a part-time employee here, along with two other people, Susan McGraw and Laura Rousset. But other than that, we're doing it for because we believe in it, and we're doing it for the community. And Henry Ford Community College has never tried to presume that they knew better than we did since we've been doing it for 27 years. But we may go astray. We always want input from the president's office and the deans. I think one dean came by last week, and in the hallway, it was a quiet period, okay, and the speakers outside of our entry door here in the student center, he said, "That's too loud." Well, we want people to hear us as they're standing in front of our entrance. But when there's no other noise, I think even some of the machines were down, vending machines in that same area, when there's no other normal noise, we can hear it through the whole building from these two little speakers, but it's not that loud in terms of the usual hubbub of a busy college day. So we even appreciated that. Tried to explain to him
feedback.
That we weren't really blasting his eardrums off on purpose. Just a bad moment he came by. But I wanted to ask you because this is sort of, I guess, an exit interview, if you will. Not really
so
intense
sad.
Here. Would we rather call it a debriefing?
No, you're right. It's just sad. That's all.
Please tell us, and it can be a combination here. First of all, your best memories of these last 6 years, and/or biggest challenges. Maybe it's the same thing.
Let me back up, though, a little bit and just say how important I think the work that you do is for the college. We're always very proud of being home to the radio station, very proud of the work you do. We take that word community in our name very seriously, and certainly you help us not only to create community within, but to serve our community, our college community. And so we thank you for that, seriously.
Well,
I thank you for that.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that Dennis, who's sitting right here, is we just begun a monthly version of a show we had before on a somewhat erratic basis, Dearborn Heights News and Views. Okay. Now, even on this show on Friday, we talk about their issues as they come up. Mm-hmm. But Dennis, who actually his day job is in Dearborn Heights Cable Television, and so he's over there a lot, and he meets a lot of these people. Plus, one of our staff members is Ned Apigian, who's on the Dearborn Heights City Council right now. And so we thought, well, monthly, we've got sort of the connections. Let's do a special show. And, of course, all of these talk shows are podcasts. They're archives, so if people can't hear them when they're first broadcast, they're out there. And that's the second Tuesday of every month at 1 o'clock.
That's right.
That's with Dennis. And I understand some of the people in Dearborn Heights government are so excited we're doing this. And, of course, our signal is real good over there, you know. So
it's just important that whatever we don't know, we make up.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So there's always something to say.
I've been known to do that myself.
and the broadcaster's trick is even if we don't know, we sound like we know.
Say it with confidence.
That's right. That's right. We do an intelligent but quick correction the next week. Okay. So now back to your
yes.
recollections here. So, your biggest challenges or biggest best memories? Might it be the same, but
I guess,
maybe not.
I guess, yeah, in many ways the same. I think that it's a wonderful college, and it was a wonderful college when I came. And so I suppose I could have coasted a bit, but really this was a time when this was a time actually when I came 6 years ago, the economy was just going into decline, and so it became a terribly important time for the college to play a role in economic and workforce development in the region. So it became, in fact, I think, very critical for us to recognize the role that we had to play in increasing our offerings to ensure that there was access to training and education for people who might be out of work, to provide access for those students who might otherwise have perhaps gone to a university but now can stay home and get a great education and save some money. And then those who may in another day and age may have gone off to work in the auto industry, but those jobs weren't there anymore, so they came to school. So I think that we have, I hope that over the past several years we have really served a need in our community. By stepping out and reaching out to that community. I think, you know, before I came, I was an academic vice president, and so much of my work was probably internal to the organization. And then prior to that, I taught and whatever. But so it was fun to come here, actually, and take on a much more external role, which is what is now expected of presidents. And I have to say, a highlight for me is how easily, how nice it was to be embraced by the community that we serve. Mm-hmm. Really lovely to be part of the Dearborn community and the region, actually, that we serve. So people have been extraordinarily kind, extraordinarily welcoming, and I hope that I have played in some way some small role for many of our students and many of our citizens.
Well, I think it's fair to say that you have, especially in light of the fact that the recent newspaper article boasts 18,000 students when, as you said, other community college and schools in general are in decline. Mm-hmm. And I just know that I may have had more contact with you because of my role in media and in the newspaper than most, but you're one of my very favorite people on campus. And seriously, and
you.
I do look forward to this. It was a yearly thing, but I get to see you more, and my
yes.
wife shared the same feeling.
Well, thank you, Dennis. And I look forward to it as well. Nothing better than spending time with students. I really mean it. I love spending time with students.
Yeah.
I learn so much about them and love listening to their stories, because so many of our students come to us with so many extraordinary stories to tell, life stories to tell.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's nice about working at a community college, because we have the opportunity to really make a difference in people's lives.
I think so, on a daily basis and in a very intimate setting as well.
I agree.
I don't want to end on a negative note at all here, but a challenge for the future. What's the number one challenge? Is it funding to keep the funding sources going? I mean, presidents are always concerned about budget and funding, but and as an external representative for us, that means talking to Lansing, talking to the government there to keep at least that port. I mean, most of the money comes from student fees, user fees, tuition, and so on. So that's it's not like a major portion comes from state or federal government, but those are significant amounts and the special grants and that. So that's probably going to continue. But is it the external politics we have to be wary of? Are maintaining quality instruction, that's always an ongoing battle on campus.
It certainly is. And I think you actually have mentioned probably what, you know, from the president's perspective, the most significant issue is funding. More and more we're relying on tuition and fees to run the college. When community colleges first started, our funding was pretty much divided into thirds, a third from property tax, a third from the state, and a third from tuition. We now only get about 12% from property tax, another 20% from the state, and then the rest has to come from tuition and fees. And but at the same time, we want to be accessible to students. And so there is a tension between, you know, keeping tuition low and being able to afford to offer the kind of quality education that our citizens have come to expect from Henry Ford Community College.
Well, we're going to try to carry on somehow without you here. We will miss you greatly. I want to thank you on behalf of the college, if the college will allow me to speak for it, and especially Susan McGraw in the Telecommunications Department and WHFR for all the support, or non-interference at least, that you've given us.
That's support.
Actually had a dean who retired from here 10, 15 years ago, since I've been with the station for long time, and he said, Jay, you've done a fantastic job with WHFR. Thank you so much. And I said, well, what especially did you? I never had to decide anything. I never had a problem. I never had to make a decision.
It's true.
You know, didn't even have to worry about it. You know, so that's one way administrator loves us. But we really do appreciate all the work you do and have done for us, and certainly wish you good luck and Godspeed in your next endeavor.
thank you ever so much. It's such a pleasure to spend time with you. It really is. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for coming to the WHFR Journal today. We're going to listen to a few commentaries from Jim Hightower here on WHFR, as we usually do on Friday. And Jim Hightower's most ardent advocate, Ralph Nader. Yes, that's right. Mr. Public Citizen himself has agreed to do an interview with us by phone, and that'll be coming up at about 1:35. So stay tuned, and we will be talking to Ralph Nader about the election this fall.
Food fight, everyone. Let's all join the fun. Actually, this is neither fun nor a fight that America's consumers and organic food producers wanted to be in. But we've been forced into it by a cabal of corporate profiteers and their government enablers. For 20 years, they've plotted to hurl fields full of spoiled food at us, including corn, soybeans, cereals, bread, and snacks. These foods have been spoiled by corporate geneticists rejiggering the very DNA of our foodstuffs. They've taken genes from other species, including animals and bacteria, and artificially slipped the foreign material into nature's own healthy products. The industry asserts that these genetically engineered crops increase farm yields and make food cheaper. But in fact, GE yields are down and grocery prices are up. The real purpose of DNA engineering has simply been to create plants that absorb more pesticides. Excuse me, but if these tampered products are so great, why are the big food manufacturers who use them not bragging about that wonderful fact to shoppers? They should be running ads shouting, "Hey, we've got GEs in here." Instead, they've conspired behind closed doors with lawmakers and regulators to keep consumers in the dark about any GE ingredients inside the products. This is Jim Hightower saying, this brings us to the big food fight. A coalition of consumers, organic advocates, nutritionists, and others have successfully put the Right to Know Genetically Engineered Food initiative on California's November election ballot. It would require food from GE crops to be labeled as such. Spooked by the very thought of consumer disclosure, an array of corporate giants are now flooding money and lies into the state to defeat the people's fundamental right to know what's in their food. To join the fight for honesty, go to carighttoknow.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
A message from our corporate governmental media establishment. Your future is on Mars. They're referring to Curiosity, NASA's lovable robot that's now probing and analyzing the red planet with human-like dexterity and abilities. Meanwhile, back on Earth, 128 comparably sophisticated robots are making electric shavers for Philips Electronics, work that would take 10 times that many humans. A New York Times article marveled that the robot's arms, quote, work with yoga-like flexibility well beyond the capability of the most dexterous human. Plus, exclaimed the Times, they do it all without a coffee break. Three shifts a day, 365 days a year. Corporations have hundreds of fully roboticized manufacturing plants already in operation or planned. And Philips' manager says, with these robots, we can make any consumer device in the world. Indeed, Apple's iPhone maker in China plans to install more than 1 million robots to displace untold numbers of workers. Likewise, robots are now assembling Boeing's wide-body jets, packing California lettuce in shipping boxes, making Hyundai and Tesla cars, and operating our nation's largest grocery warehouse. The Times says flatly, this is the future. Oh? So what are millions of displaced human workers to do? No one knows. Worse, no planning for or even thinking about the human future is underway. Instead, we're getting balderdash and BS about how, quote, this is the march of progress that'll make America more competitive. This is Jim Hightower saying, more competitive for whom and to what end? Too often, we've seen the power elites wave the flag of progress as they march right over the well-being of the many. Now is the time to start a national discussion about their reach for robotic profits, making them address the crucial human issues involved.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And we're back with more of the WHFR Journal. Jay Koronek and Dennis Reimar is here with you today. It is Friday, the 21st of September, 2012. And boy, oh boy, we have a special guest on the phone lines. Ralph Nader, are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Oh, very good. You're coming through loud and clear. You're in Washington, D.C. right now, I assume,
yes,
in your offices?
Yes, that's right. Corporate occupied territory.
Okay. I was interested. Of course, I followed your previous presidential campaigns and, of course, your work with really you're referred to someplace Mr. Public Citizen and all your work as a citizen advocate in the 60s and 70s and continuing on through today. I'm still a member of Public Citizen, the organization that you helped found, and their great work in health care and other initiatives going on, all very important. I'm primarily responding to, of course, this is big time presidential election season. You were interviewed by Time Magazine back in July, speaking about the Green Party, Obama and Romney. I mean, you're not a presidential candidate this year yourself, but you know, first of all, here at our college, a lot of the young people that is under 25, 18 to 25, they're not registered and they don't want to vote. The complete distrust of the political system and so on. Very quickly, because we don't want to hold you up for more than 10 minutes here, but what do you say to people like that? Do you just sort of shrug your shoulders and walk away? Or what's the best response?
Well, the best response is they've dropped out of democracy and they have now joined the political slavery class. Because if you don't have a say, you're going to pay, pay, and pay. And if you don't like the two major candidates, as I don't, then you can vote for Green Party, Libertarian Party, write in your own vote. Mount a protest on the sidewalk, join a action group. There's no excuse for dropping out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you drop out, you're in complicity with the forces of power who are running this country into the ground and engaged in criminal wars of aggression overseas. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
And in terms of the third parties, the Green Party and the Libertarian Party are both on the Michigan ballot and probably other presidential candidates from other parties, and we haven't actually seen the final ballot here in Michigan yet, even though they're going to have to send them out quick, because a number of Republican Party challenges, are keeping some, like Gary Johnson, a Libertarian Party, off the ballot so far, and they're going to have to be decided in the next couple of days. So I'm not even sure what the choices, the other choices, other than Democrats or Republicans, will be. Let me just start with something you've spoken many times on before, and probably why you ran as a Green Party candidate and as an independent candidate for president yourself. Obama and Romney say biggest choice in your lifetime. I've heard this before, though, but and big difference between Democrats and Republicans. You don't feel that's very much the case, right?
Well, that's what I call the two-party tyrannical trap. They basically say to people, look, you only got one of two choices. Only one of two is going to win, so shut up and vote. And that's the way they trap people, because in other Western countries, there are multi-party systems, there's proportional representation, instant runoff voting, even in some places, none of the above. We have the most obstructive system against people's voting rights and against people's rights to be candidates and get on the ballot in order to give voters more choice. So I would remind people that it was Cornel West recently who made the comment pertinent to your question. He said, Romney is a catastrophe. Obama is a disaster. He says a disaster is less than a catastrophe. So reflective of the narrow, absurd, demeaning choices we're given in this country. If we had any civic self-respect, we'd move to reform, to organize, starting with the local community on up.
I heard some citizen comments earlier this week here in Dearborn, and it's the usual thing about, oh, a third party can never win, it's a wasted vote. We've heard that for years. I know you have a response to that, but in fact, their question was even a little more savvy. They said, well, if you're so good, why don't we know about you? So what? I mean, there are these choices, and why don't...
First of all, the press doesn't report. Candidates don't get on the two-party debates because they're controlled. They're not polled because they don't get in the press. I mean, we campaigned in 50 states in 2000, 2004, 2008, the only candidates to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And we campaigned before huge audiences, filled Madison Square Garden, other major centers. And I figured that we reached about 2% of the number of people we could have reached had I been on just one presidential debate, just one of the three.
Right.
And the national polls all showed a majority of people wanted me on the debates. Now, that's replayed down at the state level. At the local level, you can go door to door.
Right, right.
And yeah, there's less excuse there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would recommend a little reading of history. Aren't we glad that there were some people in 1840 who decided they were going to vote for the Liberty Party that was anti-slavery, even though the Liberty Party didn't have a chance to win? Or the, later on, the Women's Suffrage Party, even though they didn't have a chance to win? Or the People's Party, the Greenback Party, the Labor Party, even though they didn't have a chance to win? So look back on your history. If you think it's good that those people didn't go for one of the two major parties, they went for the party and the candidates they actually believed in, then you should do the same now.
I hate to use the word, but it's almost a conspiracy by the media to go with what is already known. But it's the Democrats and Republicans that within Congress, they set up the Presidential Debate Committee, and they put fairly high standards, just like they do on getting on the ballot in the individual states by petition, fairly high or almost impossible standards to even allow any other candidates from any other party or an independent to get in there. So and it's kind
it's
of
worse
like
than that. It didn't go through the Congress. It's just a private deal. They created a private corporation called the Commission on Presidential Debates in 1987 to get rid of the League of Women Voters sponsorship of the presidential debates the next year. And then they cut a private deal, the Republican Democratic Party cut a private deal and decided how many debates, who's going to ask the questions, where the debates are going to be, who's going to be excluded. I mean, it's just a mockery on our pretensions. You have Hillary Clinton going all over the world lecturing countries on their democratic deficiencies. She ought to come back and do a lecturing here.
How do you really feel about this, Ralph? No, I agree with you completely. On our show, it's just a little, you know, hour-long talk show, although we are archived on our website afterwards. But we on purpose, try to give the views not in the commercial media, and just not to advocate them necessarily, but to let people know they're out there and they're equally valid, or at least the votes for these other ideas through these third-party candidates, they're equally valid. And, of course, a third-party
candidate more than equally valid.
Well,
If you look at the positions of the Green Party, most of them have majoritarian support. The American people want full Medicare for all. They want a living wage, or at least a minimum wage that keeps up with inflation, which would make it $10 an hour federal now, not $7.25. Look at the website timeforaraise.org for more details. They want to get out of Afghanistan. 70% of the people want to get out of Afghanistan. They want to cut out the bloated military budget. They want to get rid of corporate welfare. They want to revise the Patriot Act. So you got these little parties that are putting forth proposals that are supported by a majority of the people. And you got the big parties ignoring these proposals. If you want to know what I mean, just look up votenator.org. I'm not running this year. This is the website from 2008. We have kept open to show about 18 issues that the Democrats and Republican parties have off the table, like full Medicare for all. And you get an idea of what a narrow, absurd, cruel choice these two parties, the Dem reps, are presenting to tens of millions of American voters who are in this trap, which they have to get out of.
Well, we hope the word gets out, and it's. I was quite interested in the Time stories, primarily because you did talk about the majoritarian agenda. In other words, these are all issues, including, of course, universal single-payer health care that a majority of people really do want in this country. And I think it's only the Green Party that is strongly campaigning on that.
So, I think so. And it's also a majority of doctors and nurses are in favor of single-payer full Medicare for all, free choice of doctor and hospital, better outcomes, and much cheaper.
Now, just so thank you so much for your time today. Your website is
Nader.org.
Yeah, Nader.org, as well as
if
vote for Nader.
You want to get
Nader.
My weekly column.
Okay.
Free, electronically, folks. Just go to Nader.org, sign up, and you'll get it every week.
That's great. And of course, I read you, and your column is put elsewhere on the internet, too. Your last new book was Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win. I haven't read that, I'm sorry to say, but the paperback version of your 17 Solutions, Bold Ideas for Our American Future, which is really based on basic American traditions. I mean, talk about what is America and what are we really ethically, morally, should we be all about? That's a fantastic book. I'm glad it's coming out in paperback for more people to read that. So
it's coming out next month.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so
much.
For
the first time. If you want to get steamed,
yeah.
You want me to autograph it,
ooh.
Just go to gettingsteamed.org.
Well, thank you very much.
You can do that.
Well, thank you so much for your public service, your continuing efforts to get us on the right tracks here, and thank you for your time today on the
You're
journal.
You're quite welcome, Jay.
Right. Bye-bye for now. Wow. I didn't let Dennis have a word there. We were on a roll, Dennis.
I was fine. I learned more by listening this time. Usually I have to talk, but no. Wow, that was kind of cool.
Ralph Nader is very intense, and he has spoken for years. If we would have had more time, and he's very busy, and I'm sure he's got many other people to talk to result in, you know, bigger effect than WHFR. But nonetheless, he really knows what he talks about. If you read his books, if you listen to sometimes there's a full hour long or more lecture on C-SPAN as he goes around the country still speaking on issues, even though he's 78 years old now. He is just as sharp, just as knowledgeable as he's ever been. And sure, he's kind of like a college professor at times in terms of you have so much information that sometimes you can be overwhelming to some people who are not up to speed on political science and economics and so on. But believe me, for the few of you who are, I think you have to agree to much of what he says. Now, I know the most controversial point would probably be that there's not much difference between the Democrat and Republican Party in terms of what they have done for us, how close they are to supporting what we as the whole population, not just 47% or the top 1%, you know, who actually has an agenda that happens to agree with the polls about what a majority of Americans want. Okay. Yeah. I'm not advocating this. I'm just saying it is true. And, you know, the Green Party right now. And I even said a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't even know this, but Green Party actually advocates small government, local government, not as much bureaucracy. So Tea Party people take notice. If you look up the Green Party of the U.S., gpus.org, I think it is, and take a look at their seven major values, key values they call them, and see if they don't agree with the Tea Party, and in fact with the majority of most people. So we're not advocating them. We're just saying look and listen to other ideas and opinions. Unfortunately, you won't get them on the mainstream, or as Sarah Palin calls it for a different reason, the lamestream media. Because they're interested in ratings and they have a comfort expectation. And if they introduce anything slightly different, number one, their ratings might go down, and or their financial support from their advertisers. You know, we don't have to worry about advertisers. We just worry about loyal listeners knowing that we're doing the best job we can here, expanding their range of ideas. I don't know. Have you seen Ralph Nader in person ever?
I never have,
Dennis?
No.
Well, maybe sometime in the future. He is a tremendous, compelling speaker. And I think the one point I was going to ask him about that I didn't mention, I said I was going to earlier, is that how can you be this much a consumer advocate going for issues that are so good for a majority of people in the U.S. for so long and having been frustrated and compromised so many times? He's had some victories, some real big victories. I mean, he's the main cause that cars are safer, whether it's the mandatory seatbelt law, which actually does save probably by now millions of lives in the U.S. They've saved millions of lives because people were forced to wear their seatbelts and auto manufacturers are forced to include them, or all the other, you know, safety standards for cars, but also in healthcare again, Public Citizen and their efforts to keep us away from drugs that don't really work, that are more dangerous than they are safe. And, you know, just so many initiatives over the years, as well as trying to run for president himself to let people know there is a third choice that is totally worthy, equally legal, and I don't think it would be destructive to the U.S. situation, the system, to have a third party to sort of balance out and make and force the Democrats and Republicans to compromise on the stuff that's really good. Because if a third party president ever gets elected, the Democrats and Republicans will have to start compromising toward a good, positive end result, not just partisan results.
Right. It won't be black and white.
Won't be black and white.
Now, would your question then be to him, how did you, through all this frustration, how did you keep your passion?
Survive? How did he keep going?
He has enthusiasm, and it was just as strong.
I mean, teachers, I've been a teacher now here at Henry Ford Community College for 45 years. Many teachers burn out in a year or two. My daughter is in her 13th or 14th year. The situation she is in with special ed children, about 50% of her classroom, and we're talking about seriously mentally and physically disadvantaged students with no special ed help. All special ed help has been pulled. They don't have the budget. And she's still innovating and you know, well, if they can't learn math, maybe they can grow some food in the garden. You know, I mean, she's trying to get them into things no matter what. And even though a majority are never passing, the school still passes them to the next grade, and we're talking about special ed and others in her class, because that's the way you do it. They might suggest, well, maybe you could take a class during the summer, but they don't force it on them. And so what's happening? How you're kicking the can, if you will, or the cans, or the kids down the road here without adequate instruction or support. Education really needs our help. Okay, switching to Dearborn News. It's only 6 minutes to go, and we don't have much to say, except there's a lot to say. We don't have much time to say it in. Dennis was mentioning to me about Ted Tefelsky in dearborn.patch.com. He tells residents unhappy with City Hall sale, selling the old City Hall. It's not technically sold yet,
no.
But we've already bought a new one. That's a done deal. Okay, so the City Hall offices are going to move. And for those who don't like it, too bad. It's too late. But he says you could express your anger sort of after the fact, next year. He reminds you that November of 2013 is when most of the council and the mayor are up for re-election.
And he logically wouldn't say, hey, you could express your anger at the election thing if he wasn't against it.
They're not angry at him. I mean, if they're expressing their comments to him here, he's saying, well, you know, I voted against it.
Right.
And I even said, I bet if the council thought this through, they could get a separate millage issue to pass just to renovate and to even make more green the old City Hall.
Right.
I bet a majority of people in Dearborn, I mean, how much could that have cost, prorated over like 20 years or something? I bet we would have paid that extra amount. People of Dearborn voted for and supported the renovation, the upgrade of Fortson High School. I mean, it was falling apart, but it's a classic, historic, blah, 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 building from the 20s. And the people of Dearborn said, we will pay more millage to keep that building going for the history of it. Well, we love history in Dearborn, or at least many people do like we got a historical museum and so on. City Hall, okay, it was on the east side of town, the new City Hall will be more or less smack dab in the middle between east and west.
Closer to Southfield, sure.
Yeah, sort of no man's land or Ford land there. But that's where the new one's going to be. But I agree with him in his comment here about, you know, he thinks it's going to be a lot more cost than what they say by just building it.
But wasn't part of the equation the administrative building for the school as well over in Teaneck?
And that may still happen. I haven't heard anything that's negated that. If the schools sit down and say, we can't do anything with Teaneck, if they move into this building, and there's plenty of room apparently for all of their administrative offices to come in, then they would lease it. So they would pay the city some ongoing money for leasing part of it. And
what I don't want is a big school building left open in my neighborhood.
He points out the logic fact here, although I know that the new building would only be available for so long at that really discounted price, That's what we heard. That was a reason to buy it so quick.
Right.
City Hall, the old City Hall, the current City Hall, has not been actually bought yet. The arts group, the nonprofit group, is still trying to get major funding. They're trying to get grants, and they've done that before in other cities. They've got a good track record at that. But maybe they won't get it, which means we've got that building, and we're not going to be in it. So what happens to that building? And Tefelsky thought, cart before the horse, should have sold the building totally first and then looked for another building. He thinks there were other buildings available for the arts people to choose. But I actually, and nobody ever brought this up, but I think many of us would have paid a small amount, what, an extra $20 a year spread across all of Dearborn to renovate, to upgrade, to green the current City Hall. That's my thought. I mean, are they really going to take all their old desks and furniture into the new building, the new fancy-dancy, ultra-modern building? No, they'll be out of place. They won't fit. They're going to have to get pretty much all new set. Maybe it'll take a few filing cabinets, but I don't see that in the cost. And who knows what other costs. So if you're upset, you know, just like in a democracy, you know, vote your conscience. And of course, we won't know if you'll be still upset next fall or not. But
right,
that's what Ted Tefelsky has said.
But like I said, I thought one of it was a cost-saving measure. That was part of the equation if they could consolidate. Because, but isn't there an entire level of current City Hall that's not being used?
Yes,
but it is
one of the four floors is hardly being used.
But it's not quite big enough for the school, the administrative department.
No.
So there was
and part of the design problem is that the City Hall, for whatever beautiful reasons, was made with huge walkways. That the offices are relatively small, but the center areas on each floor, 20, 30 feet wide.
Yeah.
I mean, they can accommodate a horde of people. Not that they can get in the offices, but a lot of people could mill around there inside the building. I don't know, for tornado or some other problem. But they, you know, so it is very inefficient right now. But you think they could do something about that inefficiency factor, more insulation or green roof, a living roof, or, you know, I don't know. I know it would cost maybe more money, but I would have paid more just to keep the historic building, but it's too late now. So got to move on, folks. Real brief, two more things. Well, first of all, in case you're said, isn't today the food truck's going to be somewhere? Yes, today, Friday, the 21st, from 5 to 9, the food truck rally, as they call it, and it keeps changing places, but it's going to be in the parking lot just, I think, it's just south of Double Olive in West Dearborn. 5 to 9 tonight. Some of the great independent food vendors are going to be over there. Hope the weather is still good for them. It's supposed to be a little rain later, but food truck rally. And they did call off 2 days ago because the Chamber of Commerce got a little confused there. They did call off the, there was a Taste of Dearborn East. It was supposed to be 2 days ago, but they didn't want to confuse people about too many food events in 1 week, I guess.
Is that right?
Because you can only eat so much. If you stuffed your face Wednesday, you wouldn't want to go for the food trucks today.
You've never watched me eat.
I don't know what the reason is, but they, you know, you don't want to promote two events in 1 week from the same group, I guess. Also, finally, and it's good that it's 2 o'clock and it's WHFR Dearborn. We're waiting for Highway 61 to start. Joanne Korchinska will be here soon. I am certain of that. The best in blues until 6 o'clock. But I went to the town hall meeting. Michigan Lieutenant Governor Calley was there. He was discussing, along with the Consul General of Canada, that big country just to the north of us, or in Detroit to the southeast of us.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the second bridge is a done deal, folks. In terms, as we said last week on the proposals, the November proposals show of WHFR Journal. Again, that was the 12th, 9-12-12. You can listen to that if you missed it on the archive. Dennis and I explained in stupefying detail the six major proposals and some ins and outs of our ideas about that and other people's critique of them. And, you know, Lieutenant Governor Calley and the Consul General of Canada said there is no bad news here for America. And despite a few people in the audience who I